Hey, I'm Paul Gasmarino.
I'm James Clark. We're both from the developer platform team in Windows.
And we're excited to talk to you today about building amazing apps with the Fluent Design System.
Yep.
James and I wanted to start today's talk with this beautiful photo of a meeting room. And let's just take a moment to savor this meeting room. It's beautiful. It's open. Look at the lighting, the materials, the texture, the glass. It's also very functional. It has a bunch of swivel chairs with armrests and a nice large table, a whiteboard, a screen for projecting, might even be a Surface Hub. Businesses invest in creating great workplaces like this for many reasons, to improve productivity, to increase satisfaction and loyalty of their employees, to show off their brand when customers come to visit them. And you know, what we think about is how can we make our digital, our modern digital workplaces also be these beautiful, wonderful, delightful places, places that increase productivity and satisfaction and loyalty, places that show off the brand of your company, that reduce training costs and support costs. With the Fluent Design System, we want to help you create beautiful, fantastic experiences for your modern digital workplaces. And thankfully, with the magic of software, it's a lot less expensive than what it takes to build a great workplace in the physical world.
Absolutely.
So today we're going to talk about what is the Fluent Design System and how it can help you. We're going to build an app with Fluent Design, and James will show this awesome BuildCast app as part of that. And it'll just give you some next steps and additional resources you can use to learn more and engage more. So what is the Fluent Design System, and how can it help you? You know, first, the Fluent Design System is about helping you create experiences that feel natural on each device. That means the devices that we all use today, our laptops and our desktops and tablets and so forth, but also merging devices, new large screen 2D devices, 3D mixed reality devices, like all the great MR headsets that are launching this fall, no screen devices. And experiences that feel natural on each of these devices and with each of the inputs that people use on them. So the traditional inputs of mouse and keyboard, touch, gamepad, if it's an Xbox app, but also things that are merging like voice and speech, pen, six-DOF controllers and dials and other types of controllers, gaze and gesture, and even other types of sensors. And so how can we have a design system that helps you create experiences that feel really natural in each of these devices and all these inputs? Also experiences that help people to achieve more. With the Fluent Design System, we're not just interested in helping you make experiences that help people consume and enjoy content, but help people create, work, collaborate, and do more. Sophisticated business applications. And I think we'll show you some stuff for that today. And finally, with the Fluent Design System, we're trying to help you create experiences that engage customers deeply, leveraging people's knowledge of the real physical world and how we experience things there to make UIs that feel effortless and reduce cognitive load and draw people in, experiences that use light and depth and motion and materials and scale, and these digital techniques that were once reserved for the world of video games and major motion pictures, and make them a part of everyday experiences that are so easy for app developers to go create. You know, to do this Fluent Design System, we're trying to provide a comprehensive system for you. Controls and high-level building blocks and platform support for that, guidelines, design tool support, dev tool support, element samples, and really great comprehensive end-to-end samples, of which one we'll show you today, the BuildCast app. And one thing to be aware of with Fluent is, unlike past design systems where maybe Microsoft has gone kind of dark for many years and then come back, you know, out of the cave with some great new thing for everyone to go adopt, with Fluent we're really trying to be iterative, bring it to you along the way, learn, grow, take people's feedback and input together. And so what we'll show you today is what's in the very first wave of Fluent that's in the, you know, out this fall. Know that we're working with you and taking your input to kind of really transform user experiences over time through these iterative waves. So that's a lot of talk. I'd like to show a video now that just shows some of the kinds of experiences you can create with Fluent. And these are all experiences shipping the Fall Creators Update. Let's take a look. Well, that's fun. And those are all real experiences, shipping on the Windows 10 Fall Creators Update, using the same platform and guidelines and things that we'll be showing you today and that you can take advantage of. So let's get to it. Let's build an app with Fluent Design. And I'm going to pass it off to James to show the app that we're going to build.
All right. Let's try and build an app. So if we could switch to the demo machine, please, that would be awesome. Great. Well, sadly, the weather does not look like this desktop image outside. Aww. It's a little bit wetter and rainier here in Redmond right now. However, that's not a problem. We're going to jump in and show you our sample app. So here is Buildcast. And what I'm going to do is just sort of talk through a few of the characteristics that we'll dive into in a little bit. So the first thing is, as I drag the window around, that kind of beautiful sunset, that thing very reminiscent of summer, that nice orange, you can see that kind of bleeding through the window and this sort of rather nice texture here. As I move the mouse over some of the items here in the menu, you can also see the lighting effect. And this is something that we call reveal highlight, and we'll kind of drill into that in a little moment. When I resize the window down, you'll also see kind of the adaptive nature of the UI. And this is showing how as the window shrinks and expands, it can nicely adapt for us. Now, not to be outdone, we have a rather nice sort of nighttime scene of Seattle here. We're sort of celebrating the last build, which was here in Seattle.
Yeah.
And as I kind of navigate and scroll over this list, you'll see that we have this rather nice parallax effect. Really sort of trying to introduce that notion of depth, that notion of motion. So next up, some animations. Like if I go in now, and I'm sure many watchers are very familiar with Channel 9, we'll drill in and have a look at some of the Channel 9 items. And this is showing sort of the animation support, the connected animations, and some of the sort of beautiful staggering animations that we have here. And if I just kind of come back, you can see these play in reverse as well. So you can really sort of see that context transfer from my sort of my home page into my details page. We can come over the MS Dev Show, another favorite of ours here. And if we go in and have a look at another level of detail, another level in the hierarchy, you'll also see this further use of the acrylic material. And you can see here that we're sort of using the acrylic material to really bring in some of the branding elements. So that's a super quick overview. I think we'll switch back to Paul's machine now.
All right. So there's a bunch of different elements of things that James showed there that we're going to walk through today in detail to show you how to build an app with Fluent Design. And so that's that navigation view control, the acrylic material, the reveal highlight, gesture actions, input conscious controls, smart ink, connected animations, and perspective parallax. We've got a lot of...
Wow, there's a lot there.
A lot of fun news. These are just some of the new elements that we'd like to share with you and talk about. So let's dig in. So let's talk about navigation view first. The navigation view is that pane that you see on the left-hand side of a lot of apps that there's now a standard control for and support for in the platform. It's a great way to navigate across sections of an app, of course. A lot of apps have different pages and regions in it you want to kind of go to. It scales great to different screen sizes, not just if you have a wide or less wide window size, as James was showing, but even if you have a taller or longer window, it scrolls automatically. There's support for headers and various things like that to really take use of that space. It's optimized for every input, so there's great keyboarding and mouse, pen, all the different inputs work in a really natural way with it. It's accessible, and so actually, one thing people don't realize is if you have people with accessibility needs, someone who's using a screen reader, for example, to look at their UI, it's not just about making your UIs all look the same visually, but you have to make sure the accessibility structure is consistent so that those users can get a consistent, great, predictable experience with it. And the navigation view does a really great job of having all the right accessibility models implemented for people. And it's just a really easy way to get a high quality premium feel in your app. And all of a sudden you can take an app that maybe was looking a little, you know, long in the tooth and make it really seem fresh and modern. And so let's take a look at how we do that. And we're going to go back to the demo machine.
We'll go back to the demo machine, please. Yeah. So what we're going to start off with is this is kind of a version of the app that we took away all of the Fluent elements. And so we have a slightly less polished experience here. We still can kind of do some basic navigation. I can still go in and check out my awesome Channel 9 feeds. But you'll see that the animations are gone. And also you'll see that we really don't have the notion of navigation in this application. It's really, we're switching pages, but we don't have that notion of where am I, what, where can I go, kind of that, what we think of as a spine, a navigation spine. So let's jump into Visual Studio now and show you how we can fix that. So here I have my kind of navigation route page. And if I have a look at what we have already, you'll see that we have the kind of classical frame element here. The frame element is what provides the navigation support. And so if we want to kind of introduce and add this navigation view, it's actually pretty simple. We can do it in markup. And what I'm going to do is just come in here and uncomment this code block above the element here. And what I'm essentially doing is I'm essentially kind of wrapping that frame. I'm sort of encapsulating that frame inside of the navigation view. And if I collapse it down, you can see the structure is actually pretty simple. What I have is I have essentially my menu items, and that is defining all of the kind of elements that we have in the list of menu items. They all have icons. They all have kind of handlers that will cause the view model to navigate. And then I have this frame object, which provides the navigation that the navigation service my app needs. So pretty simple stuff, pretty simple stuff. And with literally that one addition to the code, we don't have to change anything else. All of the navigation that we had works great. But we now have actually give users this sense of where are we, where am I in the app.
It's awesome that it's so incremental to adopt it.
Exactly. So we'll fire the app up. And immediately now we have the navigation view. And a lot of those things that we looked at earlier, we now have kind of for free because we use that standard stock Windows control.
That's awesome.
Awesome.
All right, let's take it back. And so that's the navigation view. You know, a lot of people are using split view today too, and I think it's easy to move over to navigation view. It gives you that complete experience. You know, people have been doing that too. Here's a snippet of the code, and you can go to our docs and stuff and see all about more details about that. So let's get on to the next element we want to talk about is acrylic material. One of the other cool new elements in this first wave of Fluent people can take advantage of. And so to understand acrylic material, it's really worth thinking about how do we construct our UI today? We use a palette of colors. This is the standard Windows color palette. All apps today typically just use colors to build up their UI. And with Fluent, one of the things we're introducing is the idea of using materials as a fundamental visual building block to create your UI in addition to colors. And so by materials, we don't just mean kind of pre-canned PNG images or something like that. We mean rich visual effect graphs that look and feel and work like real-world materials and give users some of the intuitive understanding of things that they get from the real world and bridge digital and physical worlds and kind of mixed reality cases and kind of bringing that into as a tool for developers to use in creating their user experiences. And the first one we're introducing is acrylic material. It's this rich visual building block, and it really helps you create information hierarchy. A lot of sophisticated business apps have a lot of panes of UI, a lot of layers of UI to them, and sometimes it's hard to figure out how do you let people focus on what's important in the app design, and acrylic material is one of the tools you can use to create that visual focus so people's attention is drawn into what's important at that time. It auto-adapts to context, so one of the things that's great about using acrylic material is that if you're running over RDP or on low battery power, if you're running on different types of devices and configurations, it automatically adapts itself to that context to optimize for performance and battery life and so forth. It's pretty flexible. It supports a lot of app branding. So if you have a color or something to your brand, you can take advantage of that too with acrylic. And so it's a great new visual building block. And let's go take a look at how to do it in the demo.
Awesome. Yeah, so again, if we could switch back to the demo machine, please. Awesome. So the first thing I'll point out is, like, this is the app as we just left it. And as I drag the window, you'll see that the navigation view we just added kind of has this acrylic material by default. And as Paul mentioned, one of the things that is really cool about this is that it would automatically kind of adapt to context. And one example of that is it's absolutely theme aware. So if I change into now the dark theme, you can now see that the material just automatically changes there. And we can even switch to a custom theme that's sort of picking up the branding that we want to celebrate here in the app. Now, the other example of adaptability is what happens when I collapse down the navigation view. So notice how right now, as I move the window, we're getting what we call the background acrylic, which is showing me my desktop picture, my desktop image. If I kind of resize the app down and collapse it, what you'll now see is we're actually getting acrylic, sort of what we call in-app acrylic. So you can see that what is coming through now is the background of the application as opposed to the desktop. So this is pretty nice. And,
this layering
is, it's showing you how kind of this is built into the navigation view. But what if we want to actually add this somewhere else? Great question. Well, let's come into, once again, our favorite Channel 9 here. And if we just kind of drill in and have a look at the details for this episode, what we'll notice here is that actually right now, this header panel, it's kind of feeling a little bit flat to me. It's just kind of, it's great. It's using my highlight color. Yeah, it's absolutely meh. Like, it's absolutely meh. Let's fix that by bringing some acrylic in. So what I'm going to do is just use my XAML tools here. I'm going to turn on my selector, and I'm basically going to tell it to find that element for me in the visual tree here. Mm-hmm. And then what I can do is actually jump to the source code. And what I can see in my source code is the system accent color. Okay, so that's where the flatness is coming from. Let's put some acrylic in. Let's breathe a little bit of life in. So what I'm going to do now is just kind of dock my windows and just show some of the great tooling support we have here. And so we have the live running app. We selected the element that we wanted. And what we're going to do is change out this resource. And really, it's very, very simple here. We can just come in, select this static resource that we've defined. We've obviously put it in a resource dictionary, exactly where resources belong in a dictionary. And we'll just come in, paste it in here. And what we see immediately reflected in the running app is we now have some nice acrylic. And I think that's looking better. We're getting that nice Channel 9 branding is coming through. It's feeling a little bit more alive. What do you think about the color, Paul? Do you like that color?
You know, it's okay. It's pretty bright, you know.
It's pretty bright. I think it's a little bit too yellow, perhaps. So what I just did, I hit the F12 key. I took myself to the resource definition. And I can see here my acrylic brush. And once again, I'm defining the brush in XAML markup. I haven't got to go in and write complex shaders. I haven't got to go and write a bunch of code behind. It's in markup. And what I can see in the markup is this yellow chiffron. I'm not such a fan of this.
Yeah.
I think we'll switch to orange.
That's
a little bit nicer. Yeah. We could even go to red, maybe.
Ooh.
And you can see this is all being applied in real time, directly in the app, which makes it easy for wannabe designers like me to play around with things.
Yeah, and you still see that Channel 9 logo in the background kind of come through the acrylic to give a little bit of that sense.
Exactly.
What channel am I in?
Exactly. So that the acrylic material, we've customized it. It was pretty easy.
Awesome. All right, well, let's go back to, you know, recap that code James showed. There's a whole bunch of system resources that are provided by default for you. You can also create your own.
Right.
It's all layered architecturally as a platform to give you the right level of flexibility and ease of use. And so go take a look at and use some acrylic material. Next, we want to talk about Reveal Highlight. That's another new element in Fluent. You know, one thing that gives you is really a cohesive interaction visualization. Today, there's different interaction visualizations you might get sometimes with pen versus touch versus mouse and so forth. And Reveal gives you just a kind of a unified interaction visualization that's very natural and efficient and works with all those inputs. And it really helps focus on what's important. Sometimes people draw a lot of lines or extra UI to help you see what's interactive, what's not interactive on the screen that users need to know. They need to know what can they click on. And Reveal Highlight gives you a great way of visualizing that that's very dynamic and responsive and lets you kind of, again, focus more on the content and have a lot less Chrome and lines and things in the UI. And it's actually built into a bunch of the controls by default. If any of you are Windows insiders, you'll see that even more controls now feature Reveal Highlight. If you played with the calendar, if you played with the command bar and others, you'll see more and more Reveal Highlight. Even if you're an insider, you'll notice in the start menu and more of the Windows UI itself, this is coming alive. So really great time to kind of get on it. And you can also easily apply to your own custom controls. So let's go look at how to do that.
Awesome. Yeah, great. So once again, if we could switch back to the demo machine, that would be great. So again, I want to sort of start off by reiterating the point that in our navigation view, Reveal Highlight is something that we get for free. And so if we just zoom in a little bit here,
let me see what it is.
You can actually really see what this is. And this is not fake. This is not a bunch of like clever PNGs on Hover or anything.
No,
this
not.
Is actually like a lighting simulation that we have in the platform. Comes from our visual layer that kind of is one of our foundational layers in the system. And it gives me this really nice effect here. And this is, I always say when I'm talking about this, that it's one of the things that when you actually use it and experience it,
yeah.
it's that much nicer than yeah. when you're just watching someone else use it.
Yeah.
So this is another example.
Makes me want to hover over things.
I know, me too. I can hover all day. So this is another example. And once again, this is a list view control. And we support the reveal highlight automatically for free. And you can again see the effect is here nicely for us. Now, what I want to show is just how easy it is to add that to some of the other areas. And there's an example here that where we actually don't have reveal that we want to add it. So if we jump to now playing, and the now playing experience is something that we've sort of built as a custom experience. And you can see that we have this rather nice kind of scrubbing control that has some physics on it and some other nice features. And because we built this as a custom control, we actually sort of incorporated some button elements here. And we want to actually now go and add the reveal highlight to those buttons. You can see, again, if I zoom in to just sort of make this more obvious, you can see that we have that sort of fairly kind of binary state right now where we basically have a border popping in.
Yeah.
I want to bring in some of that reveal. So if we just jump back into Visual Studio, and we will go to the aspects of the code. We'll go to our custom MTC control. And we'll just jump directly to that page nicely here. And what we can see in our custom MTC control here is a series of buttons. We have a rewind button, we have a play pause button, and so on. Because we're sort of good developers, we wanted to make sure we reused our styles. We didn't sort of throw properties into the button here. We actually defined these as a resource. And again, our friend Mr. F12, I'm going to press that, and it's going to take me to my resource definition. And what you can see here is very simple. We just have some simple properties, width and height and margin. And you can see that we're targeting a button element. Pretty obvious. We need the style to target the button. So to add reveal, what I'm basically going to do is I'm just going to simply take the style that I have here, and I'm going to base it on one of our system styles. And the system style in question is the button reveal style. Hmm. And by simply deriving from that style, I could obviously directly apply that to the button if I didn't have a definition that I wanted to kind of use as well. It's literally as simple as that. So we will rerun the app. And I will now pick up my pen and just very briefly show how the visualization works really nicely with pen as well here. What do you think, Paul? What do you think?
I'm very excited to see how easily you did that, and now I'm excited for the experience.
Ah. Exactly. So now I've actually got my pen here, and I will come down to my controls here, and I'm now just hovering my pen.
And this is one of those things, if you have, you have to be here, because when you see that whole end-to-end pen experience, or, mouse or touch, but when you're really using the pen, and just as you're hovering, it shows up, it's pretty pretty radical.
Absolutely.
And what's cool about that, too, is then you can mute those buttons down a bit, so they're not distracting from the video playback, but again, still see that they're interactive and still have that kind
yes.
of information for the users.
Absolutely.
So if we go back to the deck and the, again, code snippet is very simple, deriving stuff from the button reveal style or the other set of reveal styles, and you can go read up about all of them up on the doc site. So that's reveal. So next one we want to talk about is gesture actions. And so let's talk about what we mean by gesture actions. All of us are familiar today with commanding on objects using context menus. You right click, or maybe you press and hold, and you get a context menu. And that's great, but sometimes you want more efficient ways to just kind of do a gesture to quickly do something. So maybe not all the things are on the context menu, but the top one or two things that you've put on a context menu let someone really quickly do that. And so with gesture actions and Fluent, we've got a really good support for all the common ways that you might want to have that work. And so that includes hover buttons with mouse or pen or other hover type inputs, swipe, which could work with touch or even one of the touch trackpads, and of course keyboard shortcuts. And you know, some of these you've been able to do more easily than others, but we now have really good, you know, support for that all up for this kind of on-object commanding that leverages these familiar gestures. And one of the things that's important about it is making it predictable across apps. And so if you all take advantage of swipe, if we all use consistent keyboard shortcuts, it actually helps users in your app be more efficient right away, get stuff done in their app, and do so in a way that really works with the input that they're using. So if they're on one of the growing, the largest segment of growing computers is with touchscreens, and if they're on a touch device, they can do those efficient touch gestures that they expect that they've learned on touchscreens, for example, as well as keyboard, if they have a keyboard device. And from a programming model, as you'll see, it builds on context menu and is very, you know, familiar to use for people who've implemented context menus before. So let's go take a look at it.
Absolutely. So if we could switch back to the demo, brilliant. So what I'm going to do is take my episode list here, and it's just a standard list view. And we've got already this sort of hover commanding in place. You can see that as I hover my mouse. And I've got the right-click commanding in place. You can see that when I right-click. And so we're already catering to those two modalities. The thing that's missing, though, is the swipe. So you can see, as I try and swipe, it's like, goodness, wouldn't it be nice?
Feels broken. I feel
it
like I should be
broken.
Able to swipe.
Exactly. So let's jump in and see how we can add that. So what we have is a pretty typical list view control. And we have what you have on every list view, which is an item template. It's a data template that defines kind of the styling for each item in the list. And I have a grid, I have buttons, I have various elements here. So once again, if we want to add swipe commanding, it's this notion of, well, we take what's there and we kind of put it inside, we wrap it inside something that we call a swipe control. Hmm. So we'll just expand this and uncomment it here. And what you can see is that we essentially have a simple swipe control. And one of its children is this notion of write items. And write items, this is really what's going to be the button content that appears on the right-hand side of the list as I swipe it. So
it.
Kind of fairly straightforward.
I bet there's left items,
there
too.
There might well be. Wouldn't that be good?
There are.
Awesome. So we'll just uncomment the closing tag as well. And again, these are just simple command definitions. They have an icon. They have some sort of command or click handler, whatever it may be. And literally, by adding that additional and a very much additive piece of code to the item template for the list, we will now have a nice swipe capability. Now, one of the nice things about this is sort of the input handling here is using our independent animation layer. And so it really sticks to my finger, and it has that little bounce on it.
Nice.
And it will actually sort of snap open bounce, and it just feels very fluid. You don't have to worry about that. It's not something you have to go in and worry about. You just add it and you get that personality.
Yeah, there's so much to what goes on behind the scenes there, and yet it was just like a few lines of code to go add.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's great.
Awesome. Great.
Awesome. Back to our slides. There's again a snippet of that gesture action code. And for how to implement all of them, there's again great guidance on the doc site. So go check that out, design.windows.com. All right, input conscious controls. Another thing that's new with Fluent this fall is a lot of improvements around making controls more conscious of the input. And so there's a few improvements that you'll see. You'll see scroll bars adapt to the input type. And so you don't have a huge scroll bar showing up all the time when you're just using touch, or even if you're just moving the mouse around the screen. So many people use trackpads now and actually just use trackpad gestures or use mice with mouse wheels and use mouse wheel gestures to scroll. That actually, it's a smaller set of people actually go use the scroll bar, but it's still there when you want it. Just go move your mouse over there and you got it. And so the scroll bar is kind of conscious of that input. It actually really works really great with the pen now. So if you use the pen to scroll, the scroller will just scroll directly with the pen. You don't have to go use the scroll bar with it as you used to in the past. Right. It'll work like a finger. But if you need that scroll bar to do a quick, scroll to the end of the view or something, you can go grab it and do that. So you'll see that. The pen panning and selection model has improved. So I mentioned pen panning now works. You just move your pen to pan. You can also, if you hold down the barrel button, instantly select. So it's very quick to either select or pan now. Text boxes, you can now speak into text boxes, which is great. Just get the soft keyboard up and click the little mic icon, and you can dictate into text boxes, which is really valuable. And there's great handwriting support in text boxes as well. And so we're not going to, in the interest of time, we won't demo all this. But the good part is just using the standard controls, standard scroll view, standard text box, et cetera, you get all these great new features and capabilities where the system's really working with all these different inputs, speech, pen, handwriting, you know, et cetera, in a really great natural way for you. So take advantage of those just with the standard controls. But the pen is one particular input that's been quite a bit of attention on. And there's some cool new advancements around Smart Ink that we want to let you know about that really help you make really fluent apps. It's worth realizing that Smart Ink is a great natural and efficient way to annotate stuff. People do that both with visual documents as well as wordy type documents. And there's great support to recognize common shapes and also do custom gesture handling as well. And so I think we've got a cool demo of that. So let's take a look at it.
Awesome. Yeah, let's jump back to the demo machine again, please. And what we're going to do now is we're going to come into our notes section. And we have a bookmark here that we're going to jump into. So let's jump here.
Really, I want to kind of maybe give you a demo
and
show you just how easy it is to start now taking and modernizing your applications and moving them forward.
Okay, so this is a nice video that Kevin Gallo, our VP, has made on Channel 9. It's the Windows Community Stand-Up. And I want to sort of show my appreciation for this particular moment where there's a demo going on. So I want to show you how easy it is to do some ink annotation. I'm going to come in here with my pen and I'm going to tap on the inking button. And what I now have is this thing called an ink canvas. And this is something that we introduced a couple of releases ago. Super, super easy to use. You get this amazing, beautiful fluid ink. And I can come in here and I can kind of go, modernize or something. I don't know what I want to say. Loving the demo. Okay. And it always does this to me. Okay. Every single time it does this. Every time.
Really, I want to kind of maybe give you a demo. Uh-oh.
Yeah, let's do it.
It's real live code, folks. There we go. We can actually draw some stuff. Awesome. So we can get our nice fluid writing here, but also we can get this sort of shape recognition. So I have the circle that I started to draw. I was trying to kind of express my love for the features that Kevin's talking about. And using the recognition capability, we take that and we essentially snap it into a geometry, and we can then put a glyph there. Mm. So what if we wanted to do something different than a heart? Let's say we wanted to actually take a different gesture, like something like maybe a triangle, and instead of putting in this sort of stock glyph, we actually put in some sort of emoji instead, because obviously like you've got to have emojis.
Who doesn't like emojis?
Yeah, who doesn't like emojis? So let's come in here, and what I'm going to do is just show you how easy this is. So I'm taking my ink canvas, and I'm basically hooking up this analyze ink async method. And this is simply allowing me to walk over all of the strokes that I'm drawing as a user here, and actually recognizing which ones are drawings. And then once I've recognized which ones are drawings, I can say, well, if it's a circle, I want to just simply add a heart. So that's what I'm doing and what I showed you right now. But what if we wanted to detect a triangle instead? So let's comment out this block of code here. And you can now see that if it's a triangle, we're actually going to show an emoji picker. And this is another new feature in the full creators update, the emoji picker. And we're then just going to add that into the scene. And one of the nice things about this is we actually get access to the drawing itself. And what makes that nice is we can do things like see what was the rectangle, what was the bounding rectangle. So irrespective of how kind of imperfect the triangle is, you can still get this notion of how big it was and where to fit the emoji into that space. So let's see if this works.
Let's see if this works, James.
The track record is never good, but that is not going to deter us. We will fight on.
It's the when demoing with magnifier, we gotta.
Yes, it's that old chestnut. All right, let's try it again. So jump into now playing, and we'll play.
Dramatically, and use this.
And we'll jump in again, and we would now draw our nice.
What is Kevin holding?
What is Kevin holding? This could be interesting.
This could be fun.
Oh darn it! It's not gonna let me. It wants to pan for some reason. I don't know why it wants to pan.
Help me get it in a scroll view. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure why.
All right.
There we go. What's he got in his hand? An imperfect triangle. Come on, baby, you can do it. Okay, okay, demo fail. Live code, live imperfect code. Demonstrations.
All right, I think you got, I think you're scroll, I think you got a scroll viewer in the way there.
I think something is bad, but anyway, right. It's great and it's actually super easy and it does always work except when I'm trying to show somebody.
I can attest that I've seen this demo work many times and it's a very fun demo. But you know, just to recap, you know, the code there, you know, using this Ink Canvas and the Ink Toolbar, there's a lot of great ink analysis APIs now that you know really help you recognize shapes and things, and they do work, and we use them all the time. All right, then
back to the slides.
Back to the slides. Yeah. Oh yeah, here we are back to the slides again. Now we're talking about connected animations, and to understand connected animations, think about how a lot of apps work today, and really how like websites from the 90s work, and actually websites today still, unfortunately, too. You're browsing some screen, and you click, like I'm going to click on Magic Lessons here, and it just breaks to the next page. So you're on one screen, and then you click, and then you're just on the next screen. And you kind of lose some context when that happens. You're not sure, did you click on the thing you expected sometimes? Now let's look at that same UI with connected animations, okay? So same thing. Now this time I'm going to go click, and did you see that seamless transition
much
as it
smoother.
Went before? So
much
I'm going to play that one more time if I can. Let's see here. Yeah, from screen one to screen two. And so that's what connected animations is about. It's a common transition animation we now really have great support for and guidance and so forth with Fluent that makes it really easy to preserve context for users and aid usability as they move from one screen to the next throughout your application. It really increases user engagement, gets people drawn into your app, and it's so easy and flexible to implement and can even be incrementally adopted over your existing app. So you don't have to go rework everything with your existing pages and frames and so forth that you're navigating around. It's very easy to add connected animations incrementally and just really add this extra level of engagement and immersion that really, once you've lived in apps with connected animations, it's so transformative. It just, using kind of old apps and using kind of web pages and things just feels broken experientially.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so let's take a look at that.
Absolutely, yeah. If we could switch back to the demo machine, awesome. Thank you. So this is our before app once again, and basically this is exactly what you were just saying. As we navigate around forwards and backwards, it's just sort of that hard cut that is very reminiscent of those websites that we're familiar with. And really, I want to fix that. I want to make it smoother. I want to take an element like, for example, the Channel 9 logo here and have that kind of transition away from the homepage here and animate and actually land in its rightful place on the details page here.
Yeah.
So to do that, what I do is a little bit of code. And I basically now look at my click handler for the button. So when I click on that channel line icon, this code runs. And you can see that right now we're basically talking to the view model and saying, please navigate to the selected feed. To make this have an implicit animation, what I do is add an additional line of code. And this is where I take the item that I clicked on, that's the item in the list view, and I retrieve the image that I want, and it's called image. And this is essentially saying within the data template of that item, retrieve that element, that image, and now start a connected animation on it and give it this name, podcast image border. So we sort of prepare the animation here. Now what we need to do is jump over and look in the receiving side. So if I just navigate here to pod image opened, this is on the target page. This is actually on the feed details page. And on that receiving page, what happens is when the image opens, so the image is there, it's decoded, it's loaded, it's ready, we can merely go and retrieve that animation we set up. And it's the same name, podcast image border, that's the one we set up. And if we find something there, we merely call try start on it. So if we run this, it will work. Now, as the thing is launching, I will mention that we haven't yet, based on what we just changed, got the back direction hooked up. And so once I've shown you this forward direction working, we'll show you how easy it is to hook up the back direction. We'll just go in and show there's the forward version.
So seamless.
Much easier. But you can see that the back direction still feels a little bit janky, should we say. So let's show you how we can hook that up. And that's actually pretty simple. We just need to jump down to our navigating from handler. So this is again, in the feed details page. So this is sort of the second page. And when we're navigating away, which we tell by hooking or by overriding on navigating from, we just look here and say, if we're going backwards, we will do a similar thing. We will essentially prepare another connected animation that is going in the reverse direction, and it's really as simple as that. So we'll run it once more. The other thing I'll mention is we've only hooked up one of the actual sort of page transitions here, and there's in the original there's a bunch more refined stuff happening. This is just one of those ingredients. So if we go back, we now have our back.
That is super cool. So let's go back to the slides a moment, and this just slide recaps some of the code that James showed about how easy it is to hook up connected animations. And so the one last element we kind of wanted to share with you and highlight today is perspective parallax. And before I dive into it, I just think it's cool stepping back to think about how this app has been modernized and how this digital, you know, workplace experience, you know, can be modernized with Fluent Design, just looking at all the things that we've kind of shown so far already. And so with perspective parallax, I think we want to show one kind of last element, maybe then give a little hint of some other stuff that's going to be coming down the line. So what is perspective parallax? It's a rich scrolling experience that allows you, I don't know if I thought my video here would show it, but I think some people are familiar with parallaxing, and the demo will show it for sure, but oh, there we go. Yeah, it's a rich scrolling experience that allows you to highlight content versus background so that if you, while you're scrolling, you can have different layers of content moving at different rates. It really helps immerse with a sense of depth users. So when you're using an experience with that, it lets you immerse with a sense of depth, lets you keep things on screen a little bit longer that would have scrolled off sometimes. Really, we've done a really nice job, as you'll see, with the performance. It's smooth and sleek. It takes advantage of off UI thread, you know, animations and so forth. And again, really easy to hook up. So let's take a look at perspective parallax demo.
Awesome. Yes. Back to the demo machine, please. Another time. So here we have the kind of experience that we've built up so far. And you can see that we've got a nice sort of horizontal list view. But it really just sort of feels kind of quite flat. And I want to kind of add that parallax effect in here. So the effect that we had before, if we launched the sort of after version of the app, is you can see this nice parallax. You can see, like, if we scroll all the way over, we can see Mount Rainier hanging out there. The sun is still shining for some inexplicable reason here.
Right, but the top image is not moving at the same rate as the
correct. So yeah, list. I mean, that, if you think about what parallax is, you know, if you think back to your gaming, your misspent youth gaming and doing platformers, it's that notion of an object far away is moving at a different speed than an object in the foreground. And down here in the foreground, we have our list view, and in the background, we have that image. So how do we add that to our page? Well, it's actually, again, a very easy thing to add. We have currently here, the highlighted code is showing us our image object, and it's got a source and obviously some basic properties set up. And once again, I'm going to uncomment something to surround that image, wrap that image. And what I have is this parallax view control. And really, the parallax view control is adding all of that intelligence to do the independent panning that we saw to introduce that notion of an object moving slower. And all that you really have to give the parallax view is a source. And the source here I'm binding to my home feed grid. And if I go and look at my home feed grid, that is essentially just the list view. And the list view has a scroll bar. And so that scroll bar is really what the source is looking at. So the speed that scrolling is happening is then taken, and we set a horizontal shift factor that determines the exact speed relationship. And it's really, really as easy as that. So we'll run it one more time. And we should hopefully see some nice parallax. Now, this is obviously a very simple example, and it's really designed just to show the simplicity. But some of the examples Paul showed are equally easy to achieve, and I think, you know, really quite delightful.
Yeah, there's very cool nesting scenarios you can do where you can have parallaxing inside list items as
exactly.
Other things are scrolling that really, again, add that sense of immersion and depth.
Exactly. Now, what I want to do is, as you know, there may be some skeptical people that look at it and go, yeah, I kind of see the depth, but it's not really in your face. It's not really that obvious. And so what I want to do now is just sort of give a glimpse at some things that we're kind of playing with, thinking about, and ideas. And this is really showing, and in fact, what we did here was we went to our design team and we said, Wouldn't it be really cool if we took that image of the Seattle skyline, I'll just bring it up again, and actually did sort of a deeper version of parallax. And so, you know, Mount Rainier is in the background, it's further away. Wouldn't you expect that to move slower? Wouldn't it be cool if we could have a go at building that? And so what we have here is just a little demo. This is a design prototype that shows a different version of the scene. And this is actually, it looks quite 3D, but it's in fact made up of a number of 2D layers. And this is really showing how you can kind of take this notion of depth and express it actually even in apps that are not necessarily a complete 3D world.
Huh.
So I can come in here. We've got you know, Go Hawks down here. We've got, for some inexplicable reason, there's an orca that's carrying the flag. And we can just pan the camera. And basically, what happens when we pan the camera is you get this much heightened sense of depth because we've actually got more layers. We've got a background. We've actually, in this case, got a full camera. So I can actually go to different places and see different perspectives. And I can do things like sort of tilt and see it. And so some of the things that we're playing with around depth and parallax are really thinking about taking what we have and really kind of starting to augment it and making it a more, you know, a more 3D experience. Now, why is that? You know, why does that matter? Very, very great question. Well, one of the things that we have in as part of Windows now is Windows Mixed Reality. And this is actually built into the 4 Creators update. And what I'm doing on this machine, I have a very nice Surface Book 2 here, is I'm firing up the development environment for Windows Mixed Reality. And the thing that's really nice about this is that basically, I don't have to have a Mixed Reality headset. I can actually switch into a developer mode, and I've done that. I've turned on developer mode, and I can actually map a bunch of the input handling. I've actually got an Xbox controller here, and I can say use that and sort of use that to kind of give me input in my world. And so with Windows Mixed Reality, it's essentially the same apps that I have on my desktop. So I have my browser, and I can fire that up, and I can sort of resume what I was doing. I have here Skype, and this is my live Skype. It's always slightly risky to do this, but this is actually, you know, exactly the same instance that is running on my desktop. And the app that we've been putting together during the course of this demo, because it's a UWP app, is in my theater down here.
Of course.
And so if we want to kind of watch Kevin Gallo continue his talk, we can come in and just go back to our now playing view. And you can see, like, this is a great example of reveal highlight. You know, we want to have this completely harmonious across the different usages and the different environments that we have. And so you can see that light effect, that beam effect.
Yeah, very natural in a mixed reality environment. Also flows between a 2D environment as well.
Exactly.
And the same app that you were able to write with that same platform.
Exactly. So literally, I mean, this is an identical app. It's just sitting there. It's the same instance. It's accessing the same data store. And so, you know, really, I guess the point of showing this demo is to show that, you know, the platform allows you to reach into that. But also, as we think about depth and parallax, as we were just talking about, There's real reasoning behind why we're kind of thinking about that and investing in it.
Yeah.
So,
back to the slides here.
Back to the future.
And that was a fun peek. I think it's the first time we've shown that app running in mixed reality through various talks. And so, so back to the slide machine for a moment. Seems like we lost our slide or something, or. No, I think we're just not on the slide machine, please. All right. So we've got, that's just the code snippet of the parallax reminder. You know, James hooked it up to a custom grid he had, but even just to a standard control like list view, you can just hook it up directly.
Exactly.
Very easily. Just for some other, you know, next steps and resources of things, you should check out the Fluent documentation. It's really extensive. We've been spending a lot of time and energy to make it great for you to combine design and dev guidance together and really tell a comprehensive story about how to use it all. The app that we've shown today, James, it's
in GitHub. We updated it quite recently. We added back the kind of visualization feature that we showed previously at Build. It's now there. So we're kind of continuing to refine the app and have it be a living sample, a working sample out there.
Yeah, and so it's up on GitHub. You can go install, and it's up in the store too, I think.
Not quite. We're working on that, so it will be coming to the store soon.
But it's up on GitHub. You can go install, see all the source, and play with it yourself. And so with that, we just want to say thank you very much for your time. And maybe we do have a moment for a question or two, potentially, if they get shown to us. Otherwise, here we go. All right. Does Fluent Design System support Angular, the same material has support for Angular? That's a good question. I think that we're looking at the right ways to make sure people building web with web technologies can make use of Fluent Design ideas and branding and stuff. One thing to be aware of that we're doing with Fluent Design System is we're really trying to create the best possible experience for users, the experiences that feel the most natural with each device, that let people create and do more and achieve more, that or immerse people and engage people with this kind of richness and lighting and depth and so forth. And so to do that, we're innovating up and down the entire tech stack, from the hardware to the drivers to the graphic subsystem to the framework itself. And so it's not that Fluent is just a kind of simple branding over the technology, but rather we're updating the entire tech stack to enable you to have that Fluent experience like we demonstrated today. And so you'll really have to have UWP to have that full Fluent experience on Windows, but we are looking at ways to let people who are using other technologies like web technology at least share in some of the branding and things. And so that's one of the things that, you know, we appreciate the question and the feedback on that, and we're looking at ways to help you do that. But you'll certainly, the full experience of the kinds of things that we showed really is a place where we're innovating up and down the whole tech stack to let you have that kind of experience. Can I use a connected animation but staying in the same page? I'm not using a frame navigate.
That's a great question. So I think you absolutely can achieve the effect. And I think it kind of depends on the structure of the page and exactly what the scenario is. In other words, is there sort of a pop-up you're trying to use, et cetera? So I think the answer is it is possible to achieve it. It kind of depends exactly on the structures of the page as to how you would go about achieving it.
Yeah. And we definitely have a lot of rich animation support on pages to do all those kinds of animations.
Right.
What's been hard for people in the past is when they have two separate pages to even do an animation at all. And so that's part of what's particularly innovative with the connected animation work. But we'd have
that's to a good
dig though. In. It's a good question, though, yeah.
Do we have any more? I think that's it.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you very much. And
Thanks. Go check out the samples.
Go check it out.
Awesome.
Thank you.